to parties, but parties made him shy, and he much preferred sitting on a disconnected axle in Tilly's garage, rolling the bones, or exploring his mouth endlessly with a long straw. For pocket money, he picked up odd jobs, and it was due to this that he stopped going to parties. At his third party, little Marjorie Haight had whispered indiscreetly and within hearing distance that he was a boy who brought the groceries sometimes. So instead of the two-step and polka, Jim had learned to throw any number he desired on the dice and had listened to spicy tales of all the shootings that had occurred in the surrounding country during the past 50 years. He became 18. The war broke out, and he enlisted as a gob and polished brass in the Charleston Navy Yard for a year. Then, by way of variety, he went north and polished brass in the Brooklyn Navy Yard for a year. When the war was over, he came home. He was 21. His trousers were too short and too tight. His button shoes were long and narrow. His tie was an alarming conspiracy of purple and pink, marvelously scrolled, and over it were two blue eyes, faded like a piece of very good old cloth, long exposed to the sun. In the twilight of one April evening, when a soft gray had drifted down along the cotton fields and over the sultry town, he was a vague figure leaning against a board fence, whistling and gazing at the moon's rim above the lights of Jackson Street. His mind was working persistently on a problem that had held his attention for an hour. The Jelly Bean had been invited to a party. Back in the days when all the boys had detested all the girls, Clark Darrow and Jim had sat side by side in school. But while Jim's social aspirations had died in the oily air of the garage, Clark had alternately fallen in and out of love, gone to college, taken to drink, given it up, and in short, became one of the best beaux of the town. Nevertheless, Clark and Jim had retained a friendship that, though casual, was perfectly definite. That afternoon, Clark's ancient Ford had slowed up beside Jim, who was on the sidewalk, and out of a clear sky, Clark invited him to a party at the country club. The impulse that made him do this was no stranger than the impulse which made Jim accept. The latter was probably an unconscious ennui, a half-frightened sense of adventure, and now Jim was soberly thinking it over. He began to sing, drumming his long foot idly on a stone block in the sidewalk till it wobbled up and down in time to the low, throaty tune. One smile from home in Jellybean Town lives Jeannie, the Jellybean Queen. She loves her dice and treats him nice. No dice would treat her mean. He broke off and agitated the sidewalk to a bumpy gallop. "Doggone," he muttered half aloud. They would all be there. The old crowd, the crowd to which by right of the White House sold long since, and the portrait of the officer in gray over the mantel Jim should have belonged. But that crowd had grown up together into a tight little set as gradually as the girls' dresses had lengthened inch by inch, as definitely as the boys' trousers had dropped suddenly to their ankles. And to that society of first names and dead puppy loves, Jim was an outsider, a running mate of poor whites. Most of the men knew him, condescendingly. He tipped his hat to three or four girls. That was all. When the dusk had thickened into a blue setting for the moon, he walked through the hot, pleasantly pungent town to Jackson Street. The stores were closing, and the last shoppers were drifting homeward, as if borne on the dreamy revolution of a slow merry-go-round. A street fair farther down a brilliant alley of varicolored booths and contributed to a blend of music to the night, an oriental dance on a calliope, a melancholy bugle in front of a freak show, a cheerful rendition of Back Home in Tennessee on a hand organ. The Jelly Bean stopped in a store.